This episode of the Westwards podcast is a production of Westwards, Western Sydney's literature development organisation. We'd like to acknowledge that this podcast is created on Darug land, and we pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. You are listening to a special series of episodes hosted by members of the Westwards Academy and alumni as they sit down and interview their guests from across Australia's writing and artistic scene. Enjoy.
Be our guest host, but thank you so much for having me as your guest host, Westwards. My name's Libby Hyatt. I get to speak with two special guests today. One of them is Michael Campbell, the executive director of Westwards, and the other is Susan Templeman, who is our member for Macquarie, our federal member and special envoy for the arts. So you can probably tell from the way my voice is breaking, I'm a little bit nervous. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to interview you guys for the podcast.
It's great to be with you and you sound terrific.
Absolutely. No need to be nervous.
Thank you, guys. Well, I was invited to do the podcast because I'm an alumna. I've got a few questions prepared, but I was hoping we could just break the ice by sharing what we're reading, watching, what we're basically consuming. Should I start? I'm reading a book named Jillaroo by Rachel Treasure. It's a rural popular fiction book. It was released about 20 years ago. And yeah, she's a strong contemporary fiction writer in the popular scene. And I'm watching Below Deck, which is pure reality television because I just love the escapism, but I'm not watching it a lot. I'm just watching it sort of as background because that's like my thing. Susan, would you tell us what you're reading or watching?
Absolutely. Well, look, it won't surprise you given the timing of when we're recording this that I have been rereading the book On the Voice written by Tom Mayer and Kerry O'Brien, and that's been a pretty constant for me over the last couple of months, just going back and dipping into it. I've got on my bookshelf to read what looks like a fabulous novel by Australian author Deborah Oswald called The Family Doctor. And that will be my next time I have the chance to open a new book. That's the one that I'm waiting for. And I've been watching on ABC TV the drama set in the 1980s newsrooms, which from memory is called The Newsroom, but I might have the name of it wrong. But why it's so important to me, because that was when I was in a newsroom. Mm. I was in a radio newsroom, not a TV newsroom, but it captures so much of what we went through as young journos back then. And you look back and it feels so much like dinosaurs. That's some of my consumption at the moment.
Awesome. So I can watch that on ABC?
Yep, it's on iView. That's how I'm seeing it.
Oh, perfect. I'll stream it. Michael, what are you watching, reading?
So what I have been watching is that with the, I've got two children, a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old. And so we have been watching, going back through the Indiana Jones movies, which it seems like just kind of a bit of fun. And then coming home in the car with my eldest, my 16-year-old, we got onto Rowan Atkinson, and to my horror, she'd never seen Blackadder. So that's also in my future as well. So, and then personally, I have yet to get on Succession. So I'd like to dip into Succession. What I'm reading at the moment is I'm reading for work at the moment. So I've just finished one of our other alumni. Of course, Westwards is a publisher. And so we are publishing Paris Rosemont's first collection, debut collection of poetry called Banana Girl. And we're going to be launching that in early November. And it's an extraordinary collection of work, a really original, authentic voice. And of course, you know, I remember Jillaroo. I read Jillaroo about when it first came out, because way back when I was the executive director and artistic director of Brisbane Writers Festival, I invited her to the festival.
Oh, great.
So I remember.
Yeah, she's published a number of fiction books since in the 20 years. That was her debut novel. She's got, must be half a dozen plus.
Yeah. No, it's a very strong voice.
Yeah. Michael, I'm a Westwards alumna. So the things which I've benefited from through Westwards, I've had the Westwards Varuna residency. I was an academician. I was in the academy. That was in 2021. So that was a year-long series of seminars. That's helping me build my craft towards publication. I'm hoping to publish my first novel, which is a young adult novel, which I'm writing. It's based in the Blue Mountains. I've also written just for the family, half a dozen picture books, like written and illustrated those. Michael, could you please tell me more about what Westwards is, who it benefits, all of that sort of stuff?
Sure. So Westwards is kind of, we are a service organisation, definitionally. So what we do is that we serve the artists, we serve the sector, we serve developing audiences, and we serve developing the writers and the stories that are yet to be. But all that boils down to, we facilitate, create and share the stories of Western Sydney. Mm-hmm. And so how that program breaks down is that in facilitating and creating the stories, we've got a pathway, of which you've been part of, which is that we start in, with our schools program, and we work in primary schools, high schools. We are currently working in 36 schools at the moment, and we do workshops, masterclasses, residencies. Out of those residencies, we create publications of work. We have after-school creative writing classes. We have holiday programs. And then what, as people interested in writing in all its forms, then that goes into the next step, which is for emerging writers. And we have various programs. One of those is the Academy. And that's for emerging writers, emerging artists, everything you need to know about writing that's not on the, about the words on the page. So that's about surviving as an independent artist in Australia. And there's not very many things. I don't believe that there is any other program in Australia helping artists do writers do that. This is a particular. Of course, we do give a bit of mentorship on the writing as part of that. But we also have, moving up from that, for people who have some work and need a bit of time away from friends and family and life, we have a residency with Varuna, the Writer's House. That moves on to the fellowship, which is for writers who are on the verge of publication or getting close to publication. And then we assist them getting published. We then, after that, we have more residency opportunities for emergent writers and early to mid-career writers, again, to get people away. And through and we are a publisher ourselves. So we publish into the trade. We do a children's book title. We have Westwards Book, and we have Westwards Community. And we employ writers, because that's really important for their career sustainability. So last year alone, we employed 267 writers, and we give sort of generally sort of about $120,000 to $140,000 worth of employment opportunities. We wrapped around that, of course, is that we work with our partners. And so we do workshops, masterclasses, programs, and we've for community stories, but those really important stories that need to get out. So we've worked with survivors of the Rwandan genocide. We've worked with the Rohingya diaspora, both here in Australia and in Bangladesh. We've worked with women finding their voice and reclaiming their voice with through domestic violence. We have competitions around that. We have a grassroots Western Sydney competition, which is Living Stories. We have worked with the libraries, all the libraries across Western Sydney. And we do council-specific writing competitions. So that's just the facilitating and creating and that pathway. And then we share as a publisher. online through our YouTube channel, we've got over 120 readings from writers. We've got our podcast. We have live events programs, which is slams, open mics, author talks, all of that as well. So it's this comprehensive part, two pillars, but an interconnected web of events to develop the writers and, importantly, to develop the readers and audience for them. And that's really important work. That's what a service organization does.
Thank you so much, Michael, for clarifying. I mean, I'm one of the writers who've benefited so much from the mentorship and from the community. Susan, since we have you, I'm so thrilled to have you, your special envoy for the arts, as well as being my own beloved federal member at my home. Susan, tell us what special envoy for the arts means, please.
Look, it isn't just a great title, although I'm so pleased to have it. What the Prime Minister's asked me to do is to advocate for the arts and to support the arts. Now, that's a really wide brief. And what it means, I'm not a minister, so I don't make budget decisions. So I can promise you anything I can't deliver anything. But what I can do is be a really strong voice with, I don't need to be a strong voice with our Minister Tony Burke, because he is an exceptional voice in support of the arts, and the things that he has been able to achieve in our short time in government have been phenomenal. But we do need to advocate across with other ministers and in other portfolios and across our caucus and, in fact, across the whole parliament, so that people are starting to talk about the value of the arts and really understand the value of the arts. We don't want arts to be just this little box that sits to the side and gets whatever funding it gets. We want the arts to be recognised as what it really is, something that weaves its way through our lives in so many different ways. So what that all means is that I get to learn a lot about what's going on in the arts world. I have a big regional focus and non-CBD focus, I suppose, is a good way of describing it. And I also get to represent the Minister and the Prime Minister at events, because one of our beliefs is that we don't just want to be a government who talks about the arts. We want to be a government who funds the arts, which obviously we've done significant funding increases. And we also want to be a government that shows up at arts events. Yeah, you see that across the board. There's huge engagement. So I'm really proud to do that. And I've also had the opportunity to represent Australia overseas in the arts portfolio and the culture portfolio. In one occasion in Germany, bringing back Aboriginal ancestral remains that were in a museum in Leipzig, and I was there with traditional owners representing Australia as the government person there for that handover. And also at the recent G20 culture ministers meeting, I was able to be there and speak about the things that Australia values in that international engagement. So it's a very broad range of things that I get to do, and it's an absolute privilege to be there as a sometimes nagging voice for the arts and creative sector. One of the first things the minister made really clear is that we are not going to tell artists what they should be creating, and we're not going to be the arbiters of that. So we've really, as in our role as a funder, we've really put the Australia Council, now called Creative Australia, front and centre back in there as the distributor of funds, where peers are making decisions about it. And obviously there's been a big increase in the funding that's available. And that's the same approach we have with Screen Australia. So if you think about Creative Australia and Screen Australia as two major funding bodies, and we're empowering them to make decisions. And I think when we talk specifically about literature, I love what Westworks is doing in terms of supporting writers and developing them. And we come in at different stages of that, like the Creative Australia residencies that we offer in Paris and Rome and Helsinki, for instance, that give writers that time and space to be able to create. And I love that your book is set in the mountains. And I think sometimes when people spend time at Varuna, that mountains just rubs off on them. And we love to see that sort of translation, although, of course, you've spent many a time in the bush up here.
Oh, that's where you grew up.
That's exactly right. So it's in you. Some of the other things we do in the writing space is the arts residencies at Bundanon down on the south coast. Mm. Help writers have their books translated into other languages so that they can be sold internationally. And, you know, one of the really practical things we're in the process of finalising is the lending scheme from libraries. So there's been no updating for 21st century technology of the public library's lending schemes, where writers get a small amount of money every time that book is, you know, when those books are borrowed, but it doesn't apply to audiobooks. Yes, or digital books. So, you know, we legislated to change that scheme. Yeah. Won't be backdated, won't sort of fix things, you know, probably should have been done a decade ago, but it will now start to kick in for writers as their books are put in libraries. So, you know, there's some of the really practical things. And the key one will be the new body, Writers Australia body. That's it. Within Creative Australia, because we've got a dedicated group that will be determining what are the priorities, what are some of the things that need to be done to support writers. That, and of course, the Poet Laureate that will be coming soon, a first for Australia to have a Poet Laureate. So there's probably a dozen other things that I should be mentioning, but there's some of the top ones for me that are tangible things that we're doing, and I hope more than anything we're giving creatives the sense that they're cared for, that they're valued, and that we know writers' jobs, artists' jobs are real jobs, not pretend jobs. They are real jobs and deserve to be supported and treated in that way.
Thank you for saying that. So something Westwards does is obviously focus on the voice of the residents of Western Sydney. We're made up of all sorts of different cultures, racial backgrounds, and so on. That was the final question I wanted to ask you, Susan. Does the government target in some ways Western Sydney, which is 10% of the population of Australia?
So the cultural policy that we've got is for Australians everywhere. Yep. From the bush to the city, from the inner suburbs to the outer suburbs, to the peri-urban areas, to the regions, to the remote areas. Mm-hmm. And the policy is about having a place for every story.
Yeah.
And in that way, there is a Western Sydney has such an important role with the huge population it has, the enormous diversity it has. In fact, I see that at Western Sydney events I go to, but yeah. I also had a round table recently down in the electorate of Werriwa with my colleague Anne Stanley, and that really brought home to me the cultural diversity that there is within all right across Western Sydney, and it's different in every place. So in terms of there's nothing that says specifically this is for Western Sydney, but the increase in the funds that are available, I would hope we see a really representational spread of that funding through Western Sydney as it's distributed in coming years. I think what older people recognise that the last decade has resulted in massive cuts in funding for the arts, and our restoration of that cuts will be difficult, I think, to fathom for people who didn't have a before. Who've only known the last decade as a creator, so don't have anything to compare it to. And I hope people see, you know, it's still going to be hotly contested funding, but there will be more of it to go around. And so I would be hoping that we see a really great representation. I took a look back to see what was the track record with Western Sydney, and there's plenty of reports that will tell you that there is a poorer share of funding for Western Sydney. And I think it's incumbent on all of us as MPs in Western Sydney to be working on that at a state level as well as a federal level. But in since 2015, there's been about 300 grants to artists and arts organisations across Western Sydney. And some of them would be well known to some of you, like the Story Factory and the Filipino Australian Diaspora Poets Sweatshop. So a whole range of them, as well as the centres like Casula Powerhouse Arts, where I held my forum, Riverside Theatre, the Campbelltown Arts Centre. So, you know, it's going to be, as a local MP, I'm certainly going to be advocating strongly at a local level, as well as more broadly as Special Envoy, and encouraging Western Sydney creators, if they haven't engaged with Creative Australia previously, to take a look at what's available, the huge range of funding that is there, and to phone them up and have a chat about what might be a really good fit.
I know representation is so, so important, like to see yourself in the media you're consuming. And I mean, as a white girl, that isn't even, like, I do see myself, but with the people who I've met who live near me, who are from different backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, it means so much to them to have their own voices out there. And that's what you're doing, Michael, isn't it, with Westwards?
Well, that's what we're trying to do. Like you said, Greater Western Sydney has over 10% of Australia's population. But it's but I love a good stat. I think a stat really tells a fantastic story. And so things like 45.7% of people in Western Sydney speak a language other than English at home. That's an incredible statistic. 60% of people who migrate to Australia settle in Greater Western Sydney. You know, that's extraordinary kind of, you know, 67.8% have at least one parent born overseas, and 58% have both parents born overseas.
This is Western Sydney.
This is Western Sydney. Yeah. So when we think, this is how I view Western Sydney. Western Sydney is the face of contemporary Australia, except the rest of Australia hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah. Say, Michael, yeah, I think that's a really great way of describing it. And having local multicultural projects is a really key part of the cultural policy, because it isn't, as Libby says, necessarily people who look like, you know, you and me, Libby, who should be the only source of creativity. And Michael, that's a real way of measuring the effectiveness too, isn't it?
It is.
How widely the funding is distributed.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. When talking literature, in Western Sydney, there are four bookshops. Outside the Blue Mountains, there are four bookshops. There is a Dimmicks in Parramatta. There is a Dimmicks in Penrith. There is a Harry. There's no longer a Dimmicks in Penrith. There's a Harry Hartog in Penrith, and there's a Harry Hartog in Camden. And there's Lost in Books, which is a social enterprise multilingual children's books in Fairfield. That's it. The rest are QBD, which is essentially kind of a remainder bookshop. That's it for over a tenth of Australia's population. So this is one of the work we do for that rich diversity of experience and story is not being catered for by our publishing industry.
Right.
And the publishing industry, the mainstream publishing industry where people look to get published, their core market, they're commercial. So of course they have to do their risk quotient. Are publishing for not over a tenth of Australia's population, nor do they know how to get to Australia's tenth of Australia's population, which is where I think we come in, because that's the hard work we're trying to do, not only to foster the stories and develop the skills of the writers that are here to clearly articulate and communicate the work that they have, but also do it for those populations not do it for populations that live in, I don't know, Double Bay, the inner west, you know, the inner west of Melbourne, you know, it's that kind of thing. And those are the hard, that's the hard work, because there is cultural literary traditions that are not the cultural literary traditions that are consumed by your mainstream publishing, or you see touted in, say, Sydney Writers Festival or Brisbane Writers Festival or even Blue Mountains Writers Festival.
Yeah, that's next weekend, that one. Yeah.
So I think that, there's a huge, big lot of work to get done. And one of, I think, the challenges that we have, and this is where I'm talking to you, Susan, is that at the moment, Creative Australia has, I believe, in literature, only one funds only one service organisation, and that is the Australian Publishers Association. They don't. There is no money dedicated for creating the soft infrastructure and opportunities for writers on the ground, for developing audiences on the ground, for going into the multicultural communities and actually engaging with them. There is no money. And partly, we don't at the moment receive any money from Creative Australia.
And look, this, what you're saying is spot on with what we heard in the consultations that I was part of in the lead up to the National Cultural Policy development. Yeah. Which is why we made the decision to have Writers Australia. And I think there's a bit over $19 million that's set aside for that, because we want to create a place where decisions on these things can be made that that work for the whole of the sector, bringing together the different parts of the, you know, it's not just writers, not just publishers, it's the whole sector coming together to say, what is it that we need to do to create, ensure we're building the audience of tomorrow? What things do we need that will do that, that will sustain existing writers and will encourage new writers? And I know we will look to Writers Australia, as we will with the other boards within the Creative Australia umbrella, to be coming up with the answers to these really pressing issues. And I didn't realise how few bookshops there were, independent bookshops there were, or even, you know, Australian focused ones in Western Sydney, because we are very spoilt in the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, I think one of the other real interesting things about sort of how the structures for support are set up is that at the moment everything's set up as projects, as project funding. The problem with that is that when you so that means that there is support to come up with something new every time in order to create new work and new careers, whereas what I think for a sustainable sector and a sector that exponentially grows off itself, to sustain and scale in order to create new work and new careers. And it's a sort of a fundamentally different kind of a sort of approach. We're in an interesting moment here in New South Wales. We've got a new literature policy coming through on July 2025 on a federal level. And at a state level, they've got a new arts, cultural and creative industries policy that they've just finished their consultation period on, and they want to announce in December. So, and in Parramatta, for example, they also are doing a new arts and cultural policy. So it's a moment where everything is about to change. It's very exciting. It's really exciting that there is a consistency of approach from local to state to federal, which is promising for the arts. But one of the things that I always find is that in almost every event, every consultation, every strategic thing I go to, everybody comes back to story. It's all about the stories. The thing that gets missed, I think, though, is supporting how those stories get created. It's about the long process for its creation. And I think that that's where the investment really needs to come in, I think. And it's very, very pleasing that we've got a government at the moment who've got open ears.
Mm. I think we're getting a little bit close to time. Is that right?
Yes. I'm the sort of person who'd happily have this conversation all afternoon, because they feel like really pressing issues, and we know they are. And the quicker we can get writers and the sector together and establish Writers Australia, I know the sooner we're going to start to see some significant changes to, I hope, inspire and sustain a whole new generation and the existing generations of writers. It's been really interesting hearing your thinking there, Michael, and it reminded me that one of my favourite books, Libby, of the year has been Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, which is, I think, it was a winner of Miles Franklin this year, and it's by Shankari Chandran, set in a Western Sydney, well, it felt like a Western Sydney aged care facility with complex storylines and beautiful characters, and I was so sad when it ended. And so in spite of the challenges, we are still getting to see incredible stories coming out of Western Sydney. And I think, well, let's hope if we do what we think governments are there to do, which is to create the conditions in which arts and culture and literature can flourish. And that's sort of a very paraphrasing Gough Whitlam. Mm-hmm. Then think what is there waiting to burst out in Western Sydney on top of what is already just taking off.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic extension of Whitlam's legacy. You know, it was Whitlam sort of began with education because that's the next generation, and turned it into the new wave of Australian culture in the early 70s. And it's so nice to believe that we've got a government who can help support that for the next wave after that.
Thank you so much for having me host this podcast. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing.
Well, it's wonderful for you, Libby. Thank you for bringing us together to be able to have that discussion.
Thank you, Libby. Lovely to chat, Susan.
You too, Michael. Thank you for your support. Thank you, Susan, for your support. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Westwords podcast. For more information on Westwords and what we do, please visit westwords.com.au.